Really glad that you are with us on this Thanksgiving weekend. We are playing back some of our favorite moments, highlights, best ofs from the last couple of months, you know, so we can get a couple days off with the family. And because the Seahawks have a Monday night football game, it means that I get Sunday off, too. So it's a full four-day weekend. And on Monday, by the way, we will be doing our show live from the CenturyLink Field Event Center from noon till 2. And then at 2 o'clock, I will shift into our Seahawks pregame coverage. And that is going to be a huge game for the Seahawks. Monday night, the Minnesota Vikings have an 8-3 record, and they are playing about as well as any team in the NFL, as are the Seahawks. And so you match up those two teams on Monday Night Football, and that's going to be fantastic. So that'll be our schedule when we are back on the air live on Monday. The Dory Monson Show, live from the CenturyLink Event Center from noon till 2, and then Seahawks football pregame starts right at 2 o'clock, and we will take you right up to kickoff of Monday Night Football, my pregame show co-hosts and I, because you are listening to your home of the Seattle Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. And between now and then, enjoy some of our favorite segments, interviews, and moments from the last few weeks here on The Dory Monson Show. I got to tell you about a phone call I got this morning.
Okay.
About 8 o'clock this morning, sitting doing show prep.
Anything before 8 or around 8, I get scared when it's really late at night or early in the morning.
Well, I knew the person is in my contacts.
Okay.
And so I knew who was calling, and it's a very, very, very well-known person. I would guess that almost everybody listening would know this person's name, which I am not going to say.
Okay.
So I've been goofing around for the last couple of months with, I should run for governor. I've been saying that as a goof, right? I'm going to have helicopters picking up cars.
Right.
Going too slow in the left lane. And, you know, just goofing a little bit. This person has an incredible track record of success at pulling off audacious things, has a incredible batting average.
Okay.
This is crazy. He says that he has $15 to $20 million lined up if I will seriously run for governor.
Are you?
I'm not kidding.
Kidding.
I'm not kidding.
I'm hearing this for the first time.
Oh, I know you are.
I just walked up from downstairs.
I know. I filled Nicole in this morning. But I have to, because I've said all along.
But have you fully been goofing? Because there are,
no.
I mean, every time you mention it, there
no,
are tons of people who say you should.
I think our state's screwed up. And I've had a couple of the people who want to challenge Inslee on the show. I've had the Bothell Mayor, Joshua Freed, and he seems like a really good guy. I've had the police chief in Republic. He seems like a really good guy. They're not going to beat Inslee. You would have to try something audacious to beat Inslee. And so there was this part of me, because I do think that, first of all, I love this state. I've spent my entire life here. I grew up here, raised my family here. I had choices. I love this state. And there is so much of it that's screwed up that there's a part of me that was semi-serious. But not really. Because what I've said all along is I would love to run. I would love to win. And I have this, I think I've earned the cockiness that I have, that when I set my mind to something, I usually succeed at
mm-hmm.
it.
And so very competitive.
I truly believe that if I chose to do it, I would figure out a way to win. I truly believe that. And then I would hate the job. So that's been kind of my thinking all along, that what an incredible life challenge that would be.
But have you not? I mean, I'm going to just challenge you here for a second. Have you not talked about that love of where you're still fighting for something and there's something that you're trying to reach. It's like where you aren't done with all the goals that you have.
Right. And I love this show as passionately as I've ever loved it. But there's a difference between, you know, the struggle 25 years ago to get the show and then to make it succeed and make it, you know, one of the longest running versus maintaining where we're at, which is at a really good high level. But it's not that rush that I had when I was 32 years old.
Mm-hmm. So what did you tell this person?
I said that we will sit down and meet. But then here's here's what's so screwed up about politics, though, and why I think politics corrupts almost every single person that goes into it. So I hang up the phone because thinking that all these people with significant resources.
I mean, $15 to $20 million. I mean, put that into perspective.
I don't know what it would cost to run a campaign, but it was suggested that that would be enough to get the job done. I don't know what Inslee spent last time in 16 or whenever. Yeah, I was 16. So, but I don't want to change. And yet, I'm not so naive as to believe that the whole process isn't corrupting. And I think there's a reason that almost every single person in politics is somebody who cares only about power and money and not at all about the mission that might have initially driven them to that pursuit.
Okay, this person who called you, now I'm starting to get suspicious a little bit. Is this person who called you someone you know would not just be trying to get you off the air?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
There's one person we'll talk about later that is not in it for, or it would be going into it for a similar reason. Who doesn't want to get into politics? Your new love.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm in love.
Oh,
I've fallen
really?
In love. Platonic. Yeah. It's strictly platonic. But, oh, I've fallen in love. So here's how it screws up my whole thought process. So I still have about 90 minutes of show prep to do. And I stopped preparing for today's show, although I have since completed all the prep that I would normally do. But I started thinking, okay.
So did you have the conversation with your wife?
No, she doesn't even know about this yet. She was gone. She was off to work
already.
So
she's hearing it for the first time, too.
Yeah, you're hearing about this before my wife is. So so then I go up and I take a shower. I get out of the shower and I start doing a real campaign commercial in front of the mirror. And by the way,
that's not a good time to do it.
No, by the way, I decided that I will do all of my campaign commercials naked because it was such an effective kickoff to the campaign. But I started thinking, okay, seriously, in all seriousness, because, you know, I had a bunch of people who came up to me at the Seahawks game and said that
well,
I
just
should
look,
do this.
Just look on our Facebook page.
I know, and that show we did in Federal Way, I mean,
right.
they all said that they would support it. So then I have to start thinking seriously. So what's the one thing that impacts and affects our lives more than anything, here in the Puget Sound area. Now, again, I'd have to be governor for the whole state. And, of course, I love the rural people, and I love central Washington. And I'd have to get to know eastern Washington a ton better. But here it's traffic. It steals our life. It steals our time. And, you know, Sound Transit's going to happen, even though I'm not a fan. But they're talking about, you know, raising the Sound Transit cost to build tunnels to Ballard and West Seattle. And you know what? Screw that. That with my guiding hand as governor, if Seattle wants to do these little extra frills, then Seattle's got to pay for it. Not the people of Pierce County who are in the taxing district and said no to all of this. Not the people of Snohomish County who would get no benefit. So I would look out for these taxpayers in Pierce and Snohomish who are getting screwed because Seattle now wants to add billions of dollars to the cost by tunneling instead of the bridges they were talking about. But anyway, but I don't like Sound Transit, but I'd have to work with them. But I'd want to protect the taxpayers who are getting abused by them. But I would look at every single pinch point. You know, it's so stupid that we built this convention center in the middle of downtown Seattle on I-5, where it pinches down to one lane. And so you got this gridlock. And I don't know what the solution is, but I would sit down with the greatest transportation experts whose focus is on increased car mobility. Yeah, we'd still provide the buses and the light rail and all of that. But we're, this war on cars, this contempt for all of the people who have to get around by car, it's going to stop. And I would bring in transportation people who are not anti-car zealots, which is all we have in the discussion these days. And I was thinking, you know, could we even fly a bridge over the convention center? You know, ramp it up for a mile in each direction and get a bridge over the top of the convention center to reduce the congestion. I mean, you'd look at everything like that. But it's insane that people every single day are sitting in their cars for 45 needless minutes because nobody is thinking about them as part of the transportation picture. I would give tax breaks to companies that would start doing swing shift and graveyard shift. That wouldn't cost us a penny. But every car we'd get off the road, because companies would embrace that strategy and get a tax break for it. That's another way you could get it. And government workers who don't interact with the public, they'd work swing and graveyard to get them off the roads. That's a way to reduce traffic at zero cost. Zero. Look at what it is. What's a holiday that's a federal or a federal holiday that most of the people don't recognize or most workers don't? Give me an example. When the banks are closed, but everybody else works.
Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah, a lot of people take that off.
Columbus Day.
Perfect.
Veterans Day.
Yeah. Those days, traffic is down just usually by the DOT count 10 to 15% because government workers aren't on the road. But suddenly, you're going 55 miles an hour through Seattle instead of 5.5 miles an hour. All you have to do is get about 10 to 15% of the cars off the road, and it makes a gigantic difference. So you give tax breaks to companies that'll do swing and graveyard. You give tax incentives for companies, you know, like banks and Starbucks that have a lot of outlets, but maybe all their employees are not at the outlet closest to where the employee lives. You give them tax advantages for that. So you get rid of any anti-car zealots in government. You support Sound Transit and buses, but you get rid of the anti-car zealots and you are supportive of the 97% of people who still take trips by car, and stop telling them they're the enemy because they got to get their kid to piano lesson after work. And then you got crime and drugs and homelessness. No more legalization of drugs. You know, Dan Satterberg, Snohomish County, that's done. No more making this the magnet destination for heroin addicts all around the country. And for the homeless, focus with lasers on, we will give you housing, but you got to be clean and sober. We will get you treatment for your addiction so you can be in that housing. We will get you the mental health counsel. The mental health system in this state is an embarrassment under Jay Inslee. We will get you the mental health treatment you need. And we will give you a ticket out of state to go to any place in the country where you have relatives who will take care of you. But no more sleeping on the streets in this state. We will give you love and compassion and care and help to get clean, to get warm, to get mental health, all of those things. But if you refuse all of those things, then you go into jail. If you do, well, your second option is to leave the state and go back to someplace you have family that'll take care of you and love on you. And if you refuse all of our help, if you refuse to go back to family that's out of state, then you're going to go to jail. We're not going to let people sit around on the streets anymore. And we'll start turning around lives and stop letting people kill themselves slowly, which is the most uncompassionate. Letting people, Kashana Sawant says she wants to stop the sweeps of homeless camps. Her strategy is to let people lie in the cold and the rain and in their own filth and commit crimes so they can shoot up heroin until they die. What a horrible public policy. And that is most of the public policy throughout our region. And it stops. It stops. We will give you every bit of help you need. We will give you the housing if you're clean and sober. And we will test to make sure that's a condition of you living in the housing we provide for you until you can rebuild your life and start taking care of your own life. And the crime? No more of this. We're not going to prosecute property crimes. We're, shoplifters can shoplift with impunity. It stops. And we'll stop hating cops, too. We will stop this institutionalized hatred of cops that emanates from the left. We will not allow any rogue cops, but we will give them the support they need to enforce our laws. So we're the worst property crime state, or at least Puget Sound area, worst property crime region in the United States of America. That's got to stop. And our prosecutors are going to have to start prosecuting, and our cops are going to be able to start enforcing laws and not have to worry about, 2 hours writing something up and the prosecutor tosses it. And then sanctuary state is over. It's done. We'll do aggressively what Florida just did and make sanctuary not only illegal at the state level, but we will ban it. Cities and counties from embracing sanctuary. We will be welcoming and we will appreciate all the legal immigrants in our state, all the green card holders who are here legally, but we'll also enforce the real ID system, and we'll go after employers who aid and abet the problem. And sanctuary's over. Sanctuary's done. I'd have a constitutional amendment that I would somehow get through our radical legislature to ensure that there's never an income tax in this state. Come up with a small business owner's bill of rights when you have these city councils, flexible scheduling and the minimum wage imposition and all these things that are going to destroy our economy, that's going to turn us into a ghost town when we have an economic downturn. Go to work immediately on a small business owner bill of rights. And then state budget's about $50 billion. I'd reduce it by 8%, $4 billion. We got about 4 million taxpayers. So that'd be $1,000 per person that we would return through reducing B&O taxes, reducing sales tax, all of those things. And that would be money in your pocket. I'm starting to think serious about this. Now, where it goes, I'll keep you posted. I'm not going to be mysterious and behind the scenes, but I will be honest. When somebody with a ton of credibility and a track record of incredible success says they have 15 to 20 mil lined up, if I choose to pursue this seriously, I got to at least think about it. So those are the few of the ideas that I sketched out in my serious thinking about it just since I got the call this morning. Glad you've been listening to some of our favorite interviews and show segments from the last several weeks as we take a couple days off on this Thanksgiving weekend. But we want to put together some of our favorite moments for you to listen to because we appreciate that you are tuning in, even though you're enjoying the Thanksgiving weekend, as are we. So thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for tuning us in. And we will continue with some of our favorite moments as this Best of the Dory Monson Show continues. Well, as you know, listening to the show, several weeks ago, I and the rest of America was absolutely transfixed by just a terrific run on the show Jeopardy by a guy named James Holzhauer, who won well over $2 million. But it was the way he won that just absolutely fascinated me. And then I heard he was a professional sports gambler, which was at one point early in my life, my aspiration. And I said, I knew I had to talk to this guy. So from Las Vegas, James Holzhauer joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Hey, James, it's great to talk with you.
Hi, Dory.
Have things settled down a bit for you in the weeks since the on-air run ended?
I guess a bit is the right term. There's still, you know, a shocking to me amount of public interest in me. But, yeah, it's slowing down just a tad.
Yeah. I mean, that had to be just absolutely crazy, though, to go from an unknown to one episode got 14 million viewers. And I mean, you were the sensation in a real fractured television world. Everybody came together to watch you run.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, the successful sports bettors try to keep an intentionally low profile, and that kind of blew up overnight for me. So.
I guess the reason, and I know my producer Nicole told you this, when I was 14, 15, 16, I was pretty good with math, and I was absolutely determined. And I didn't know what my game was going to be, James, but I was going to be a professional gambler. I started in backgammon. I played in the U.S. Open backgammon tournament when I was 17. I was able to do speed figures before they showed up in the racing form and did pretty well at the track. But everything always caught up to me. How do you stay ahead of the game as a professional gambler?
It's definitely a challenge. You know, if I try to do the same stuff I was doing 12 years ago, I would just get destroyed today. You know, you kind of have to keep evolving along with the times. And, you know, sometimes you'll find an angle and it works really well for a month or so, and then the bookie catches on to what you're doing and just everything adjusts. You know, sometimes when one bookmaker changes things up, everyone else follows their along, even if they don't understand why. So, innovation, I guess I would say.
And so you're constantly evolving and innovating. And I guess what fascinates me about that, James, is so's everybody else who's trying to beat the book. And there are a lot of brilliant people and a lot of Ivy Leaguers with very high-powered computers, and everybody's trying to get that edge. So how in the world can you continually get enough of an edge to make a living at that?
Well, a lot of it comes down to just being willing to outwork the opposition. But, you know, you also have to have these valuable insights of kind of, and I would say a third thing, I guess, is just always look at everything. You know, I used to bet only baseball because I didn't think I knew anything about the other sports. But, you know, if you do a deep enough dive, you can find something and, you know, work on exploiting it as long as they'll let you. I kind of stepped away from baseball betting now because they're really getting good at setting their odds, but, you know, finding more stuff in hockey and football to work on.
Are you a grinder or a plunger? And do you just try to find a steady 4% edge, or do you find an edge and jump in with both feet?
Oh, God, if I could get a 4% edge on everything, I would love that. No, I mean, there's sometimes going to be, like, some props and futures that offer, you know, a big double-digit return on investment. But for the most part, you know, if you're betting games, you're looking to just get a couple percent here or there. And if you can do that over 50 games a week, you're going to do great.
You have a family, right?
Yes, I have a wife and a young daughter.
Now, is that a challenge? Because that was something I had to come to grips with. My wife and I have three daughters. They're all in their 20s now. But back when I was, before I was married and I was thinking about that life, James, I was also thinking, is that a family life? How in the world do you balance that?
Well, it's a challenge. You know, one of the things is it's great that I can work from home, but it also means that, you know, my kid sees me around all day and figures, hey, daddy's home, I can play with him. You know, it doesn't always work out that way, especially on a football weekend.
Yeah.
I would say that it's kind of a double-edged sword, like being around but not being around all the time. It's nice that I get to set my own hours, though. I think that's an important aspect of whatever's next for me, is I need to have a fairly flexible schedule, prioritize the family time.
What makes you so different? Because your brain clearly works in a remarkable way. And is that something you realized at a young age? Because, you know, I've been watching Jeopardy. I was watching Jeopardy as a little kid when Art Fleming was the host. I mean, back in the late 60s. And I've always thought, I'm okay. I was in awe of you and the stuff that you were able to pack away. When did you realize you had a brain that was capable of some pretty extraordinary stuff?
You know, I was kind of labeled a prodigy when I was a young kid. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that label. But, you know, one thing I think that really helped me is I didn't put any limits on myself based on what past contestants on Jeopardy have been able to achieve. You know, I thought, hey, this, you know, the ceiling is really far and above what everyone else has done before me. If people just played the game differently, they could achieve this. And, you know, it was nice that I was the one who was able to get there. But really, I would have been excited to see anyone trying this kind of audacious play up there.
Yeah, but it takes some guts. I mean, because thinking outside of the box is still a rarity, even though I think everybody understands that that's the way you break out. But it's still something that there's something in most of us that constrains us from being innovators, it seems.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, sometimes people need to see someone else doing it before they realize it's possible. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I never would have imagined someone slugging 800 like Barry Bonds did every year, or hitting 5 threes a game the way Steph Curry does now, you know, but someone has to try it and show that it works.
Yeah, what the heck happened to us, James? You said you were a prodigy. I was 15 when I graduated high school and started college, and look at us now. You're a sports gambler, and I'm a radio talk show host. We could have actually changed the world, James, if we had channeled it elsewhere.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that downer note.
Well, no, here's what I heard you want to do next, because you know, the first reason we wanted to reach out with you was what you said here on MLB Network.
I don't know. You know, I like living in Las Vegas. I'm not especially keen to move, but, you know, my wife loves Seattle. She maybe can put a word out to the Mariners for her.
Oh, yes. Jerry DePoto, yeah.
We know Jerry pretty well. We can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what, James, Mariners need some help right about now.
Yeah.
But that, is that your real dream and goal? You'd like to be the latest generation Moneyball guy?
Well, as a teenager, that was definitely the dream. You know, the dream of family man James might not be exactly the same, but I will say I had a nice chat with some people from the Mariners front office. They really seem like, you know, results on the field be damned. They're running a good operation there and have a good long-term goal in mind. I should have put out a reach to, I think, the Seahawks or the new hockey team, and I'm temporarily calling the Seattle Freeze, because I think that there's more room for improvements in those sports. Honestly, you know, the baseball front office, they're really doing a great job now. They're kind of working harder and harder to get smaller and smaller edges over the competition, whereas I think some other sports are lagging behind and they could really use the help more.
Well, that fascinates me that you say that, because I do the Seahawks pre- and post-game radio, and I talk to Pete Carroll on my show every Friday. And I've talked with him about that a lot, about analytics in football. And I know that every team in the NFL feels like they are on the cutting edge, and they certainly all have analytics departments. But do you think that's a sport that could do a lot more than what it's currently doing?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, if you set like a computer to play the optimal game of, say, football or hockey, it would look pretty different, I think, than what they're doing right now. Whereas in baseball, I think it would look strategically fairly similar to everything that's going on. You know, 10 years ago, I would have said, hey, teams need to be shifting more. They need to adjust their batting orders more to give their players more at-bats. But, you know, teams are really doing all this stuff now. They're not ignoring any of the obvious low-hanging fruit. You got to just climb a ladder now to pick the high fruit that's still there.
Without giving away what's swirling around in your brain, can you give me one example of where you think football could change dramatically by introducing that concept?
I would say that the simplest thing is that teams should just pass more than they are. You know, passing plays on average are still much more effective. They add more to the team's chances of winning than running plays do, and yet teams are still running the ball like way more than they ought to be.
Yeah, I don't know if the Seahawks are your team, because Pete Carroll's absolutely committed to the run, man.
Well, You know, he's shown that that's going to be a winning approach, too. So I would hate to doubt Pete.
Yeah, that's true. Well, James, it's really fun talking with you. As you can tell, I love all of this stuff. But more than anything, I loved watching your run. I had stopped watching Jeopardy live every night. I always had it on my DVR. But, man, that became appointment television. Then, you know, people were talking about how you had ruined the game. And I thought, are you crazy? This is the most fun I've ever seen on this show.
Yeah, well, you know, the episodes all taped before. They haven't really aired any episodes featuring contestants who have been able to see me on television. So some people out there are wondering if the game is going to change in the upcoming season with people having seen me and before they go to tape, and maybe they'll adapt to new strategies. But I don't know. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, and also I know, you know, Alex Trebek was so publicly battling his illness, and I know that you've given a chunk of your winnings to pancreatic cancer research, and I'm sure that that's a relationship that you will treasure, because, I mean, he's just one of the most beloved guys in the country.
Yeah, you know, we're not supposed to fraternize with the employees of the show because they had these scandals 60 years ago, and, you know, everything has to appear above board now. But, you know, just getting to spend a little time with Alex is really a treasure. I really hope he keeps the fight going for years and years so other contestants can get that pleasure.
Yep, there you go. All right. James, really fun talking with you. If something pops with the Mariners or Seahawks or the new hockey team here, I'd love to reconnect with you sometime.
All right. Pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Take care. James Holzhauer, Jeopardy James, who just captured the nation a couple of months ago with that tremendous run. Love to hear your thoughts. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. Lots more straight ahead here in the Dory Monson Show. Really glad that you are with us on this Thanksgiving weekend. We are playing back some of our favorite moments, highlights, best ofs from the last couple of months, you know, so we can get a couple of days off with the family. And because the Seahawks have a Monday night football game, it means that I get Sunday off, too. So it's a full four-day weekend. And on Monday, by the way, we will be doing our show live from the CenturyLink Field Event Center from noon till 2. And then at 2 o'clock, I will shift into our Seahawks pregame coverage, and that is going to be a huge game for the Seahawks. Monday night, the Minnesota Vikings have an 8-3 record, and they are playing about as well as any team in the NFL, as are the Seahawks. And so you match up those two teams on Monday Night Football, and that's going to be fantastic. So that'll be our schedule when we are back on the air live on Monday. The Dory Monson Show, live from the CenturyLink Event Center from noon till 2. And then Seahawks football pregame starts right at 2 o'clock. And we will take you right up to kickoff of Monday Night Football, my pregame show co-hosts and I, because you are listening to your home of the Seattle Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. And between now and then, enjoy some of our favorite segments, interviews, and moments from the last few weeks here on the Dory Monson Show.